60 years. Your home for classic hits. 1570 AM and 96.9 FM.
WILO.
We hope you're enjoying today's broadcast of the WILO Mental Health Summit. Approximately 1 in 5 adults in the U.S., 43.8 million or 18.5%, experiences mental illness in a given year. Approximately 1 in 25 adults in the U.S., 9.8 million or 4.0%, experiences a serious mental illness in a given year that substantially interferes with or limits one or more major life activities. Approximately 1 in 5 youth, age 13 to 18 or 21%, experiences a severe mental disorder at some point during their life. For children aged 8 to 15, the estimate is 13%. 2.6% of adults in the U.S. live with bipolar disorder. 6.9% of adults in the U.S., or 16 million, had at least one major depressive episode in the past year. 18.1% of adults in the U.S. experienced an anxiety disorder, such as post-traumatic stress disorder and specific phobias. Among the 20.2 million adults in the U.S. who experienced a substance use disorder, or 50%, or 10.2 million adults had a co-occurring mental illness. Here's some social stats. An estimated 26% of homeless adults staying in shelters live with severe mental illness and or substance use disorders. Approximately 20% of state prisoners and 21% of local jail prisoners have a recent history of mental health condition. 20% of youth in juvenile justice systems have at least one mental health condition, and at least 20% live with a serious mental illness. Only 41% of adults in the U.S. with a mental health condition received mental health services in the past year. Among adults with serious mental illness, 62.9% received mental health services in the past year. Just over half, or 50.6% of children with a mental health condition aged 8 to 15 received mental health services in the previous year. African Americans and Hispanic Americans each use mental health services at about one half the rate of Caucasian Americans, and Asian Americans at about one third the rate. Half of all chronic mental illness begins by age 14, three-quarters by age 24. Despite effective treatment, there are long delays, sometimes decades, between the first appearance of symptoms and when people actually get help. Serious mental illness cost America $193.2 billion in lost earnings per year. Mood disorders, including major depression, rhythmic disorder, and bipolar disorder, are the third most common cause of hospitalization in the U.S. for both youth and adults aged 18 to 44.
Let's rejoin Ken Hartman and Laura Archibald for more of the Mental Health Summit on WILO. Special thanks to our sponsors, Wampler Services, Inc., Encompass Credit Union, and the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce. Now here's Ken Hartman.
Okay, welcome back to the Mental Health Summit. I'm Ken Hartman. I'm being joined by Laura Archibald. We have a great panel here. We're going to continue our Mental Health Summit with a question from Laura.
So we hear frequently and have heard this morning about trauma and adverse childhood experiences. We know that that is something that continues to be an issue. You probably see it at the schools a lot, but also in your practices. So how does trauma and adverse childhood experiences affect people's mental health?
So I recently attended the Indiana Youth Institute's Kids Count Conference, and that was a two-day jam-packed conference where I learned so much about ACEs and how those, and ACEs are adverse childhood experiences, and how when a child experiences one ACE, that can impact their schoolwork, that can impact their mental health, that can impact their regular day-to-day activities, getting up and just going to school. But I also learned that many children not just have one ACE, but they have so many ACEs. And the more ACEs that they have, the more detrimental that can be on their physical health and their mental health.
So obviously, I'm not a mental health professional, but I know that the kids, you know, when they come through the door every morning, they're bringing their baggage with them, you know, as they come through the door, and it's hard for them to leave that outside. And so whatever's happening at home is carrying over to school. And like Casey said, you know, it can affect their grades, it can affect their attendance. And so while I don't know you know, professionally, what all of that means and how that transfers. I see it on a daily basis.
The experiences we have as a child affect us the rest of our lives. You know, it's that shapes our perceptions of things, that shapes, you know, how we see the world, you know, it, so, and then how we learn to deal with it and how we were supported through those adverse events and those traumas, that also affects how we see the world and whether the world's a safe place or not. You know, if we as a child or had lived in a violent home, then, you know, that's going to affect how they experience the world. They, you know, they will be fretful. They may be mistrustful. You know, they aren't sure if, you know, if they hear a loud noise, if that means that there's a plate coming toward their head or anything, you know, similar like that.
At Healthy Communities of Clinton County, we partner with Quinton's House, and Quinton's House is a child advocacy center, and there I am a child advocate to all of the children who go to get interviews there, and mainly all the children that go do have one ACE, if not more than one ACE. And through, I've only been there about 2 months, but the 2 months I have been there, I've heard of stories of where children have experienced sexual abuse at a young age. They are not able to, something as simple as, you know, going to the bathroom is difficult for them because they've experienced something like that. And that's going to be with that child till the day that they die. And it's extremely important to address the mental health aspect to the children, to children who do experience ACEs, because it does have a strong impact later on in life, and to our work benefits our community, their children, their families. Yeah.
Okay, our next question is, how do we raise resilient youth, and why do you think they're more susceptible to things such as this?
Well, I'll tackle the first half of that. How do we raise resilient youth? We listen to them. We love them. We accept whatever it is they bring. We teach them problem-solving skills. We let them fail. We need children to learn that not everybody is going to win all the time. There are people who, you know, there are teams that win. There are people who get different raises in life because of their performance. And because when a child understands that failure is a part of life and they learn how to deal with it, that's a coping skill they've developed.
I know that Healthy Communities has been partnering with some of the county schools. North Central Health just released a youth resiliency planning grant, and we helped Community Schools of Frankfort, Clinton Central, and Clinton Prairie write that grant. Kirsten, do you want to talk a little bit about why it's important that the schools have the skills to teach kids resiliency?
First of all, thank you for helping us with that grant. And we have had Healthy Communities in our school for multiple reasons, multiple ways that they're helping us, and we greatly appreciate all that you do for us. I would say, you know, Leslie, everything that Leslie said about raising resilient kids is absolutely true. While we, you know, some of us are parents, I'm a parent. I know it's difficult sometimes when your child is facing adversity or losing or struggling in a class. But those are things that as parents, we have to talk about those things, and we have to explain, you know, this is going to happen. And now what are you going to do to overcome that adversity? As far as the schools, we are looking through this grant, you know, different curriculums to bring into the school to help with exactly those kinds of things and the social, emotional, you know, well-being of our students and how we can help with those things. And we obviously are in education because we care about kids, but we don't have all the answers. And we are sometimes struggling to find ways to help. And these kinds of grants that these corporations are providing are so beneficial for us to be able to do that, to go out and look at those curriculums and know, you know, what's going to work specifically for our school. Because what's going to work for Clinton Prairie isn't necessarily going to work for even, you know, Frankfort down the road, because we have different demographics and different kids and different situations. And so to have that sort of curriculum to bring into for our specific students is going to be huge for us to be able to move forward in helping our kids. Our counselors, you know, we have two counselors right now for 550 kids, and it does become very overwhelming for them to try to do everything that they can, but we are not equipped for the types of help that a lot of our students are in need of right now. And so these kinds of initiatives and grants are going to help us better serve our students. And we still won't have all the answers. We, you know, we're never going to have all the answers, and we're always going to need help from our outside organizations, but this is going to make it a little bit easier for us.
I would like to add to that, you know, if your child's teacher or your child's school counselor or your child's principal, you know, your child's mentor, anybody reaches out to you as a parent and says, you know, hey, I think your child could benefit from seeing a mental health professional, please listen to them. Please listen to them. Because they spend, in some cases, more time with your child than unfortunately, as a parent, you do. But they see the things that are going on with your child. They know what they're saying, how they're acting, you know, during the course of the school day where they may be hiding it from you. You know, please listen, help, and don't worry about the stigma that somebody's going to say, oh, my gosh, they had to go to counseling, you know. Please get that help for your child.
I think another thing also we need to talk about is, as far as the answer being, certainly it's good parenting to meet the physical and the spiritual needs of individuals, particularly kids. They need that spiritual foundation as well for a direction, I think. One thing, too, I think is a solution to the problem is social media. We need to take advantage of opportunities to get the word out to everybody through social media, the radio, newspapers, meetings coming up, but just general information that would be helpful for those reading or not directly connected with an agency or organization. But there's that availability on a regular basis through the newspapers or radio to have little things that can help those parents or whoever with the needs of the day.
To add on to what Dick said, how do we raise resilient youth? And through my QPR training, which is Question, Persuade, Refer, they taught us to address protective factors and risk factors. So we need to increase our protective factors, our services in the community, offer support for the families, education for the families and for the schools, and then lowering those risk factors, so gang usage, domestic violence, lowering all those risk factors that may impact mental health. But something at Healthy Communities of Clinton County that we've been doing is we have partnered with a nonprofit called Comfort Cases, and those are a trauma kit or a backpack filled with goodies for individual children who are impacted by ACEs or by needing to be placed into a foster home. So that's one way that we've been trying to raise resilience. And another way is partnering with Clinton Prairie. Is we've been able to partner with another nonprofit called See Your Strength, where we have been able to get mirror decals. So their whole school is going to be jam packed with positive messages in the mirrors on all the bathrooms. And another thing that we have been doing with we have received a grant through the IU grant. The IU Health Foundation gave us a grant, and we are partnering with the Learning Network, Healthy Communities, and Open Door to educate providers in the community, to provide community awareness, and to provide a screening tool using the PHQ-9, and we're going to be using that screening tool to give to all medical professionals. So, you know, when you go to the doctor and you do your regular checkup, they ask, you know, how's your diet? How are you sleeping? When's your last period? They ask you all those questions, but they don't ask you, you know, how's your mental state? Are you feeling anxiety today? How's the last month been sleeping-wise? Digging more deeper into those questions, so that we can have a better picture of their mental health. I think that that's lacking in the medical field. So we're bringing that in and trying to increase the screening tools and resources, so that if someone, a medical provider, sees that they have an issue, they can use that tool and refer them to someone in our community.
I think that we have talked a little bit about the relationship between mental health, suicide, and social media. But I wonder about the digital world in general, you know, video games, you know, social media, apps on phones, all of those things. You know, what way can we use those for the positive, and what ways do you think those affect our youth in particular, but like Kirsten said, everyone in a negative way?
I'll start out with that. I think obviously it's a tool, and like any tool, some of those can be misused and can have harmful effects, or they can have positive effects. On the positive side, now more than ever, you can reach out to a friend or a relative or a coworker and at least check on them. As you stated earlier, some folks prefer texts. I know I have some of my family that you call and they won't answer, but you text and you get an immediate response. Everyone's different. You can use that tool for good. And along with that, resilience and resilience of the children, where are your values as a community and as a society nowadays? The digital age, all the additional stress, all the additional distractions, they can be a great deterrent. We don't even know what, and I'm coming from the public health side of things now, we don't even know what the impacts of all these devices are going to be 20, 25, 30 years of use down the road from now. We might find that there's some horrid side effects of all of these. So we really need to consider, again, those type of devices too, I think, lead to people being more isolated than they've ever been before in life. And as I think any of us, me being a lay individual, can agree, isolation leads to things that folks that are not healthy as far as thought processes go. We are a societal people. We are in communities for a reason. There are always exceptions to the rule, but on for the greater part, we're all that way. And I think that this digital age has led to a lot of that. I think there's still opportunities, like have been mentioned, to use it for good, to combat it, but on the larger scale, we really need to worry and look at it from a societal standpoint. Do we want our kids just playing video games all the time when they're off from school, or do we want them doing the things that are out, are healthy, that they're moving, that we don't see these off products from not having any activity, like unhealthy and obesity and diabetes at a young age? These are things we need to really look at as correlated together in society.
I think one thing we need to touch base on is the fact of, I know we've experienced nationwide terrorists and resulting catastrophic things. I know we have legislatures and politicians and others talking about solving some of those. And they may talk only about doing away with certain guns. Well, okay. But I'd like to see, in those cases, drill down through the events of an individual, what has led him to be where he is now. And I think it's going to tell you that the real problem is at a lower level, and that needs to be addressed from a political standpoint and from a legislative standpoint to get more people involved in the treatment, the counseling, where it really needs to be initiated and started as far as something really effective. But I realize it takes legislature, but I think it's also going to take us to emphasize to those people who have the power to put money where it should be put, wherever that may be. I think there's a great opportunity in that area.
Someone said this to me the other day, and it just kind of rang a bell in my head, where bullying doesn't stop when you get off the bus now. And it just was like, wow. When I was younger, you know, I had a phone, but it was only for calling. I didn't have Instagram, I didn't have Twitter, I didn't have DMing. You had to, you know, crank up the computer to do any of that. And I had so many sports I was in, I didn't have time to do that. So I just think nowadays when kids, they get off the bus, that all of that baggage from school and that bullying from school, it follows them right home to all the other baggage that they might have at home too. So it's just a constant wheel that kids are dealing with. And one of the things that Healthy Communities has been doing with the IU grant that we got is bringing Sources of Strength, which is a school program, into the schools, where we are working with youth councils and local SAD groups to kind of bring awareness into the schools.
This may be branching off a little bit, but anyone who's had a toddler, I'm going to talk about the five whys. And so, you know, a toddler, you know, can I have this? No. Why? Because you don't need it. Why? I think that is something that we need to use with our kids as they grow older, too. How is school? Fine. You know, like you said, drill down with everybody. How was it? What did you do? If it was awful, why was it awful? Because of this class, why? You got to not just take their one-word responses and move on. You know, my son, how was school? Fine. And he's in my school. So now I'm going to ask, how was this class? How was this class? What did Mr. Hilgadeek say? What did Mrs. Sabin say? You know, but don't just take a one-word response from your kids and find out what is going on a daily basis. And the social media is infiltrating into their school day. People are mean. You know, kids are mean. They're going to be mean. They're going to say things on social media that they wouldn't say to your face. It is very easy to get behind a keyboard or a phone and type anything you want and think nothing's going to happen from that. But we do see it on a daily basis, and it has added a whole nother level to what we do as a school administration. So, you know, and ask your kids about their social media and check their social media and have their passwords and know what they're posting and what they're looking at and who they're talking to. And it can be a very scary thing.
Okay, if anybody wants to have any questions for our panelists here, you can call 659-3338, and we'll get that on for you as soon as possible. Also, I'd like to thank our sponsors for this, which are Encompass Credit Union, Wampler's Services Incorporated, and the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce. Question now is, where do we go from here moving forward?
Again, we as a society need to recognize that mental health issues are a biological illness, just like cancer or just like diabetes. And there are ways to treat these, just like those other illnesses that we accept on a daily basis. Without getting too political, we need our elected officials to understand mental illness and to value treatment of mental illness just as they do treatment of those other biological diseases. You know, we need to put resources into mental health care so that we can decrease the number of mass shootings or the number of kids and adults committing suicide because of the fact that they have been bullied. And that's adults too. Adults get bullied. You know, it's not just kids. And as they've said, you know, those with your phones and computers, that bullying continues right into your bedroom, you know, as you try to go to sleep at night.
Something that I think, you know, where do we go moving forward is bringing more community education to the into the community. And that's something that we've been trying to do here at Healthy Communities with our Stepping on Stigma campaign. You know, bringing trainings, offering a place for people who have need resources. They can come to our office and they can ask us a question. We can dive into all of the resources available nationally, federally, in the state of Indiana and in our community in general. But then also volunteering, I think that it's great for everyone to get up and be involved in your community, know your neighbor, know the parents that go to your child's school, have that relationship, because when we have those relationships, it improves our mental health because we know we have support in all those areas. And then lastly is bringing more support and just listening more.
We need to also pay mental health professionals, just like teachers, a living wage. You know, teachers have fought for it and have gotten better pay over the years, not what they deserve by any chance, but mental health professionals are some of the lowest paid professionals who have, you know, bare minimum 6 years of college and graduate school.
I would say that, again, providing more resources is always needed, but like we've said here, that a lot of this is going to begin at home. And listen to your kids. Listen. If you ask a question, really listen to what they're telling you. We have at Clinton Prairie on January 22nd, we are having a full day with a national speaker, Jeff Yalden. He is coming in to address our student body in the morning, and then he will be meeting with teachers. He will be at school all day for everyone who wants to talk to him. He will be meeting with teachers after school, and then we are having a community event that evening, I believe at 6 p.m. So, you know, come out and listen to Jeff Yalden. He is a renowned speaker. He's going to be talking to our kids and our staff about the things that we've talked about today and mental health and how to deal with tough situations in life and traumas and suicide prevention. And so we are looking forward to hosting him. So I would encourage you to come with your kids. If your kids go to Clinton Prairie, they're going to see it in the morning, come back in the evening with them and listen to him again.
Very good. Words of wisdom. One thing I might mention also, we have a daughter who lives out of state, and she's a social worker. And she investigates reports of child abuse. And there is an area where additional funding, as far as monetary means, it's a very tough type of social work. And there's so much need of it, because I think where she works, there's a backlog. And there just not that many applicants to get into that area, but certainly it's challenging. My daughter really enjoys it. There's time of laughter, time of tears, particularly if you have to take kids out of the home and so forth. And it's so, but it's a work that's important. It has to be. There's work that needs to be done, and the funding should readily be available for like state agencies and through legislature and whatever to provide that service, which is very much needed.
To follow up just briefly on what Dick said and what others have said here, I like your idea of volunteering as a way of taking that next step. It is so very important. I like your idea of listening, because quite often we listen with the intent to respond, and it's so very important to listen with the intent of trying to understand how someone is thinking. Those are sort of two different kinds of listening skills. I know in the Lafayette area, we have done a lot, and we've made a great progress in tackling some of the mental health issues, but the reality does kick in. In our community, we simply can't do a whole lot more without some of the state and national policies taking a change. And part of that is increasing both insurance rates as well as Medicaid rates. We should be embarrassed that we are trying to operate a system with 1973 wages. And we need to be providing possibly some creative solutions to a lot of the mental health professional shortage. Maybe some sort of college loan reimbursement for folks that do go into this area. There's a lot of challenges out there, and local communities can do a lot. Families can do a lot. But it takes all of us, and we need some of those funding issues to actively be addressed.
Real quickly, I think moving forward, I think what we need to realize is the time. This is a real situation. It is happening now. It's generational in some cases. The time to act is now. We need to do something about this now in order to stave off what we are going to for sure see are bigger issues in the past. If you're one of the 1% out there that somehow think that this doesn't affect or bother you in any way, I think we've heard from several individuals here, it is costing us as taxpayers as well. Those funds are unfortunately being directed at incarceration and other areas where they could be being utilized to bring these resources that we're talking about to the communities now. So I think, again, we should empower ourselves as communities to realize this, start to talk to our civil leaders and see about getting something done to turn this trend around.
We have a question from a caller. Is not having enough money in a family home to provide for children the major cause of mental health problems?
I would say it's not the major cause. It can influence it. It can affect a mental health problem, but often a mental health problem is, as we've said before, is biological. You know, there's a chemical imbalance in the brain that that causes depression or that causes, you know, schizophrenia, those kinds of things.
I totally agree. We also know that children that grow up with ongoing pervasive stress have a higher rate of mental illness as adults. Some of that can result in the ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences that kids experience. So again, not the major cause of mental illness, but it does play a role, as do many things.
One thing I want to point out, I think that maybe sometimes this gets lost in the message, is that while adverse childhood experiences and trauma definitely impacts people's mental health, there are people out there who struggle with mental illness who have been raised in wonderful homes with wonderful parents who have not experienced a lot of adverse childhood experiences. And that leads you to definitely know that this is an illness. It is a biological condition that people suffer from. All of those other things contribute, but there are still people out there who have wonderful childhoods and don't experience a lot of trauma who still suffer from mental illness. That should tell you how it is a biological condition. It is a science of the brain.
Okay, this is going to be the last question. We're going to wrap this up after this, and I'm going to let's go around the table here. If anybody's got any closing comments or things they want to say, here's the time to go ahead and let it go.
I just like to take a minute to thank you for sponsoring this program. I think this is very significant, and I encourage people that are listening to this to talk about it. Talk about it with their family, their friends. Bring mental health issues even further out into the public discussion, and not to turn the other way. To be able to embrace everyone, despite what they may be experiencing, and to let them know that they're important. And again, there are people here that care about you.
We are 2.5 days away from Christmas break in our schools. And while the majority of us look forward to those 2 weeks off, we need to remember that there are some of our students who are not looking forward to those 2 weeks off. And I just would hope that everyone in our community would remember those who are less fortunate and who are struggling with mental illness or in any other sort of issue at home, and know that just because we don't have all the resources we need, that we do have resources in our community to help coach kids, Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, your churches, your schools, to just know that our students in this entire community need everyone in this entire community to have their back.
Okay, I just want to remind everybody that this program is being videotaped and it will be archived and available on WILOTV.com for anybody at any point in time if they want to go back and watch this. I appreciate everybody that's been out here. I think there's been a very good discussion on this. I appreciate all your time and effort, and we'll see you guys down the road. And everybody, take care. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to a special Casper Media presentation of the first annual WILO Mental Health Summit. Today's broadcast is also archived for your viewing playback anytime worldwide at WILOTV.com. The program will be played back in its entirety tonight starting at 5:30 p.m. on WILO. WILO wishes to thank those who participated in today's event, and special thanks to our sponsors, Wampler Services, Inc., Encompass Credit Union, and the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce. The WILO Mental Health Summit is a production of Casper Media.